take the scenic drive to the Guitar Oasis Cool in Jefferson County. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, jeffsguitar.com.
With me from Costa Rica, it's John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation here at slysoffice.com. Did I disappoint with the Pointer Sisters, Comrade Nickel?
Hey, I think I vaguely remember that from my youth, but that is such an excellent, that is such an upgrade of the song.
Oh, absolutely. It's on it's on the same album that they did Fire from Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, really nice. So they're like, they're showing what they can do there. Well, no doubt about it. And they really know how to improve songs. But you know what? That song is, you chose it for a reason. And I think that listeners should be informed of that reason.
Yes, they should. And I dedicate that to two of the finest public servants ever in the United States government, Reince Priebus from Kenosha, Wisconsin, and Anthony Scaramucci from, I don't know, Queens, the Bronx,
someplace in the metro,
yeah,
the metro, mm-hmm, tri-state area.
Uh-huh.
But can I just say?
Yeah.
Can I just say? Not only you're technically wrong in one element of that when you're saying public servants, because neither of them are actually serving in a public capacity any longer.
You know, they were public servants
and former public servants.
What a week it has been.
It's just too good to believe.
It really is. You couldn't even begin to write this stuff.
But you know what? Honestly, if you step back and you stop with all the hyperbole and you just look at this logically, how else would the mooch have ended? You know, it wasn't like the mooch was going to, you know, like 7.5 years of, you know, high quality, dignified service and then deciding to retire. You know, no. The mooch was going out, angry eyes blazing.
Does the mooch have a law license?
I think. Well, didn't he go to law school with? Did he go to law school with Obama?
Could we be looking at Anthony Kennedy's? Could we be looking at Anthony Kennedy's replacement here?
No.
Okay.
They used on the Supreme Court slide. They used to actually say that certain seats kind of were, you know, not reserved but intended for certain religions and certain, you know, ethnic groups. This whole theory of sort of the political machine balancing the court and stuff like that. So they have filled the Scalia seat. So I don't know. I don't think there's a place for Scaramucci.
Okay. As a matter of fact, they didn't. I don't believe they filled the Scalia seat with a Catholic.
Well, I know, but that's Trump. He's a disruptor. He doesn't do it the way others do.
Although, my religion is very well represented on the Supreme Court. They don't all quite look at the doctrine the same. They're not exactly Dorothy Day Catholics, but whatever.
Neither's Paul Ryan.
That is correct. Here is a few months ago, Donald Trump talking about his White House. Well, we'll try that one more time. We put that in the wrong button.
I turn on the TV, open the newspapers, and I see stories of chaos. Chaos. Yet it is the exact opposite. This administration is running like a fine-tuned machine. And the other thing, chaos. There's zero chaos. This is a fine-tuned machine.
Define fine-tune.
By who?
You know, I mean, well, a graduate of Trump University.
Or of the Wharton School, wasn't right, it, or something Wharton like School. That. And, you know, you always emphasize you went to all these like really good schools and things like that. You call me crazy.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead. But I don't think he entirely paid attention. You know, in those finest schools. That I may be wrong there. So, by the way, Scaramucci, just to be clear, has a JD from Harvard Law School. And I don't know if it was right parallel to Obama, but I think it was relatively in the same zone. So, you know, the court could be a possibility for him. Now, as regards the chaos issue, which you have just brought up, so ungraciously, I might add, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that Trump tweeted today. And, you know, you're going back in the historical record there for that quote, which I totally respect. And, you know, I dig what you're saying. But if I'm not mistaken, I'm just checking something here, and I know this is the genius of live radio, but I think that Trump's tweet today was about this issue. And I honestly think he said no chaos in the White House today.
Here is Ryan Priebus from the Dear Leader meeting that took place, the first cabinet meeting, full cabinet meeting in the White House in June.
On behalf of the entire senior staff around you, Mr. President, we thank you for the opportunity and the blessing that you've given us to serve your agenda and the American people. And we're continuing to work very hard every day to accomplish those goals.
Have you got a hanky?
It's a blessing. It was kind of a blessing to be there, Sly. And you know how it all turned out, right? So well for everyone concerned. Okay, Sly, I'm going to take us back, because remember, I don't want you to think I was out of my mind.
Nope.
There?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is Donald J. Trump, President of the United States, tweet from 9 hours ago today. I realize that some people may listen to this a little later on, but his tweet is, highest stock market ever, best economic numbers in years, unemployment lowest in 17 years, wages raising, not rising, but raising, border secure, SC, which I think means Supreme Court, and then the last line of his tweet with an exclamation mark, no White House chaos.
Oh. Well,
so on the day that his communications director was disappeared, on the, you know, cusp of his chief of staff being essentially fired.
On the tarmac.
Left on the tarmac, I might add. He's saying no White House chaos. So I think that Trump is setting a new standard on the definition of chaos that we have to work on a little bit. But I will tell you that no matter who he brings into that administration, no matter what personnel changes are, they're never going to get someone who can sound as sincere as Reince Priebus did in that tragic moment where he did the Dear Leader response.
If you think that.
And because everybody else was in on the joke. But when you listen to that, you sort of think maybe Reince wasn't in on the joke.
I want to see this list that the White House staffers had nicknames for Reince Priebus. I'd like to see that list. There's evidently a list of nicknames for Reince Priebus. Here is Reince Priebus.
Can I do one last thing, though, before we go to the nicknames? I just got to do this because I know. Did you see the picture of him when he was up in Congress trying to, I think, lobby for the health bill? And he went out to answer his phone, probably Trump telling him to do something, like pass it. And the pictures of him between two garbage cans leaning against, like kind of leaning into the wall. And it's like, here he is, the chief of staff of the White House, and he's like answering phones in the garbage section.
Well, there's...
And then combined with that, the thing where it was reported over the weekend that there was a fly buzzing around Trump's head.
Oh, come in here and kill that fly. Wow.
I know. He called him in. He called him into the office to kill a fly.
He is the presidential fly swatter. Here is Reince Priebus on the Sean Hannity show Friday night, and I believe, looked to me like Reince Priebus still might have been in the White House, because, you know, I think he went back and finished some work up in the White House before he...
Oh, yeah, because the CNN thing earlier.
You're right.
Like he was
gonna work. Right. So here is Reince Priebus.
And joining us now, former RNC chair, and I guess now former chief of staff, Reince Priebus. How are you doing at this moment? How are you feeling? Is this... You feel good about this, bad about this? Has this been building? Where are you with this?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's always mixed feelings, but generally good. Number one, it was an honor and a privilege to serve President Trump. I think he's doing an amazing job. I think he needs to get more credit for the great work he's doing. And I don't know obviously, why he hasn't gotten more recognition around the country for the bills, the executive orders, and it's this constant obsession over distractions. And so, look, he's doing a great job, but I'm feeling good about the fact that he's making a change that makes him comfortable with moving forward.
Generally good.
You know, Sly? Sly? You and I have been friends for a pretty long time.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen you through some ups and some downs.
Uh-huh.
You've seen me in some, you know, good times and bad times. When I ask you, how are you doing? If you go, well, generally, good. I know that things are really awful.
Well,
just the thing of how can you know the problem with Reince Priebus is?
Oh, well, that's a long list.
Well, first off, the problem was they didn't introduce him accurately. He's a former RNC chair, former White House chief of staff, former Republican nominee against Bob Wirch
for the state Senate,
who lost the Kenosha state Senate seat.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the thing about Reince Priebus is, he's loyal to a fault, and that's a term we use a lot, loyal to a fault, but there really is a meaning to it, and it is that you're so loyal that you actually harm that which you are loyal to. And so to have him go on and do these, you know, North Korean-style interviews, right, or, you know, old Soviet Union-style interviews where you've been clearly fired. Right? You've been pushed out. There's no question of that. And to come on and say, no, I just decided, you know, sometime Thursday night or maybe Friday when I was getting off the plane, that I just wasn't going to be a part of this anymore. It was my choice. And I'm glad the president's getting to do what he wants. You understand, it's so awful. It seems so dishonest and so tragic that he makes Trump, if he is loyal to Trump, which he seems to be, he makes Trump look worse.
Here is Charlie Sykes kicking him down, and then I'll play a clip of Steve Schmidt really kicking him.
And can I just say something about Reince Priebus? I mean, who I've considered a friend for 15 years. I think he's a tragic figure in my mind. I think he's a good and decent man who is very effective, who made a seriously bad choice, a choice very similar to the choice a lot of Republicans made, which was to capitulate to Donald Trump, to empower and enable Donald Trump, because they believed somehow that they could, what, contain him in some particular way, that they could control him. And obviously, this has ended in tears, as I think it was completely predictable that it would.
Okay, here is Steve Schmidt.
Well, it's an extraordinary concept, right, that the White House chief of staff has to police the phone of the President of the United States. And I'm going to disagree with Charlie Sykes and have a little bit of a harder edge on his evaluation of Reince Priebus. Reince Priebus grabbed the power. He grabbed the glory. He wanted the power. He wanted the job. He wanted to be White House chief of staff. And he abetted a president and a movement that is destroying conservatism as a coherent intellectual philosophy, number one, that will do grave damage to the Republican Party over time. But this White House, this administration, on a day-to-day basis, as it assaults and degrades the office of President of the United States, it's doing real damage to the country.
Well, I think that's a thumbs down.
That's what passes as a debate. You know, it's like, he's a tragic figure. No, I think you're really missing the point here. He's destroying America. But I just want to say one thing about Charlie Sykes. The line of, we were friends for 15 years.
Were is the important part of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we were friends for 15 years. Now he's a tragic figure. The only counsel I would give there is that I think Reince has been a tragic figure for a long time.
Well,
I don't think it just started when he joined the Trump.
I know someone that was on his dorm floor in college in Whitewater, at UW-Whitewater. And evidently, the floor hated him so much, they tried stuffing him down the garbage chute.
Did it work? The garbage said no. No, I mean, this is the thing about Reince Priebus. Reince Priebus, in a, you know, a pretty big year for Republicans, good year for Republicans, got together all the corporate money and the insider money you could possibly get, right? Went into his hometown of Kenosha, challenged Bob Wirch, and got wiped out.
You really are.
Got beat bad. And then they said, well, with your political skills, you should be chairman of the Republican National Committee because you're so good, right? And then he put everything he had into electing Mitt Romney in 2012. Wiped out. Now, obviously, the off-year elections went good, but I'm kind of betting that those, remember the first off-year election, the 2010 cycle, you know, that I think went good for his predecessor, didn't it? For Michael Steele.
I'm
looking at the timeline.
Oh, Michael, yeah. Michael Steele was reminding people of that on TV the other night.
I know. So the first cycle. So he had. So what we got with this guy is one good cycle, which was, you know, 2014, which I think was usually those tend to go in your second term of a sitting president. They tend to go pretty good for the opposition party. And then he got, after the 2012 election, remember, he announced the big autopsy for the Republican Party because they were so unsuccessful.
Uh-huh.
And they came up with all these plans, which were relatively noble. They said, you know, it's the 21st century. We have to reach out to people of color, to women, to young people, even to groups that we haven't always been that nice to, like the LGBTQ community. We got to be a little bit kinder and gentler as a party. And then Donald Trump comes along. Donald Trump comes along, shreds the autopsy report, rejects everything that Priebus supposedly was trying to do. And instead of saying, no, this party has to be in the 21st century. It can't just be clawing its way backwards. He says, oh, great, Mr. Trump. I'm on board with you. And he actually manages Trump, you know, with the help of, you know, Steve Bannon and all these other people, to a finish that was 1 point worse than what Mitt Romney got when Reince Priebus said the party had to remake itself because
all right,
it didn't appeal to the majority of the people.
We got to take a break here. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at slysoffice.com. Summer is usually a great time for food choices for people in Wisconsin. Backyard gardens, farmers markets, grocery stores brimming with fresh produce. But for a lot of people, they don't have those choices because school is not in session. A lot of kids get their nutrition during the school year, so we need your help. St. Vincent de Paul has a food pantry that gives your neighbor in need some of the same choices you have. But to keep it going, we need your help, your donations, support the food pantry. And you can do one of a couple things. Drop off an extra bag of groceries from the store or your local farmer's market. Also, a $50 cash donation feeds a family of five for a week. You can organize a food drive, whatever it takes to keep that food pantry going this summer while the kids are at home. Let's do what we can. Here's what you do. You contact St. Vincent de Paul at svdpmadison.org. That's svdpmadison.org. Let's work on this together.
SlysOffice.com brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us again, John Nichols from the Capital Times. Before we move on to health care and Donald Trump's character flaws, I want to talk about General John Kelly as well.
Oh.
All right. Here's a man who obviously served his country. He lost his son in the war. I'm not going to take any of that away from him. But when I saw the speculation, is John Kelly going to be someone who shows uncommon courage and tells Donald Trump to do the right thing? And I kept hearing people raise that question. Well, we'll have to see. I thought to myself, why don't you go back and look at the interviews with Homeland Security Director John Kelly, where time after time after time, he's already failed that mission. And let me play one of the clips right here.
hovering over our discussion right now is the big headline of the day, this this amazing charge from the President of the United States that President Obama personally ordered a surveillance of Trump Tower in New York during the campaign. Now, you're privy to sensitive information. Are you familiar with that? Do you believe that? You've worked with both of these presidents.
I don't know anything about it other than when I was sitting in the off studio here watching CNN. If the President of the United States said that, he's got his reasons to say it. He's got some convincing evidence that that took place.
Mr. Kelly has never retracted that statement.
Yeah, and here's the interesting thing. He was head of Homeland Security at the time. Some of our very top former intelligence people had already, people who were really tied in, had already come forward to say, there's no grounds for this. This is absurd. This is, you know, beyond the pale. It's a, the president's wrong. Kelly himself could have said there, I don't know anything about it. I have not heard anything about it. I can't comment. Instead, he took it to a much different place. And if you listen to the rest of that interview, he keeps talking about it. And he essentially says the president has his reasons. And then he starts talking about it as if it's a fait accompli, i.e. it happened.
I'm going to guess that Donald Trump saw that clip. What do you think?
Oh, I think so. But you know what else I think he saw? I don't think that's anything compared to when, I think it was February 7th, they called John Kelly to the, I think it was a House Oversight Committee. And of course Kelly was treated with respect. He should be. He gave this country tremendous service over decades. And of course, as you say, we don't take anything away from that. But we look at his tenure with Donald Trump. How does this guy respond to Donald Trump? So, House Committee calls him in, and they say, about this Muslim ban thing, there are reports in the Wall Street Journal and other places that you were really upset. You didn't think this was a good idea, and you were upset about how it was put together, not being informed enough and stuff like that. And Kelly said to the committee, it's all on me. My fault this thing wasn't put out right.
And that was...
There was no evidence of that. There's no evidence to suggest that it was his fault. There was no evidence... In fact, the news reporting suggested that he'd been left out of the loop. But he went before that committee and took full-on responsibility for the absurd, awful rollout of the lawless, unconstitutional
ban. There have been multiple times where both John Kelly and H.R. McMaster have covered for this president and not stood up to him.
When you say it's all on me for one of the major bad initiatives of this administration, I mean, it's, again, mind-boggling. What he could have said is, you know, I'm sorry, Congressman, I'm not going to give you any personal opinions here. I will tell you the chain of events, and you know, I've got it written out here in front of me. I'll tell you the chain of events as I experienced them or something like that. To say it's all on me is an absurd statement that is heard as absurd by everybody else, but it's somehow very comforting to Donald Trump.
That's all that matters.
My sense of John Kelly is that Donald Trump put him there because this is a distinguished man with a great record of service who tragically is willing to tell a incredibly misguided and destructive president that what that incredibly misguided and destructive president is doing is okay. It's a terrible, in my mind, I think Kelly is just not the right person for this job.
There is not a right person for this job.
No, in fairness to Kelly and to anybody, and even Reince Priebus. Mm-hmm. You know what? The one thing I'll say about Reince Priebus is, you know, he's loyal to a fault, but the guy he's working for isn't loyal in any sense.
I got a lot of clips to get to here. Peter Wehner, of course, is a distinguished conservative. I don't agree with him on very much, but he is smart. He obviously wrote a lot of William Bennett's material. He doesn't like the Christian right in many ways, and he really doesn't like
Donald Trump. Listen to what he said on MSNBC.
No, I'd lay that bet as well. Look, we've seen Donald Trump enough to know that he's fundamentally uncontrollable and uncontainable. And it doesn't matter if James Baker was chief of staff. The personnel at the White House is mediocre. There's no question about that. But the problem at its core is Donald Trump. And it is at its core that he is a person who thrives on chaos and manages with chaos. But it's really deeper than that, Lauren. It is a psychological and emotional affliction. He has a disoriented and disordered mind, and there is no controlling or containing that. And what I also emphasize is we're 185 days into this White House, and this chaos is unlike anything that we've ever seen, and they haven't faced a genuine crisis yet. Can you imagine if you had a 9/11 type situation or a financial meltdown or a war, a military collision happen with this crew and with this commander in chief? That's the really frightening prospect. This is not going to change. It's his worst week, but it's not going to be the worst week of the Trump presidency. There's no bottom with these guys.
There's no bottom with these guys.
You know what's funny about that slide? You and I, you know, we think we're tough on Trump. We're nothing compared to his own people. Right? You know, the people who, you know, and in fairness, who I give full responsibility for creating Donald Trump. Because remember, Donald Trump exists because of the conservative movement in America.
Yeah, although let's, Peter Winter has been against him from the very beginning and never wavered.
So some of these other people who are talking up now. But they created a movement that was a welcome host to Donald Trump.
Well, that's what Paul. That's what Paul Krugman writes about today.
But it's not just him. John Dean, in his brilliant book "Conservatives Without Conscience," wrote during the Bush years. He said the conservative movement no longer has anything to do with what we understood of, you know, Barry Goldwater or William F. Buckley at one time when he stood up to the John Birch Society and all these other folks. It has now become a desperate movement that seeks to win at any cost, and that was 10 years ago. I want to ask, like, what happened in that 10 years? What happened in that 10 years?
It's only gotten worse.
Scott Walker became governor of Wisconsin, and they backed him as he attacked unions and attacked trial lawyers and other folks who try to stand up for people who don't happen to be billionaires. Other states, the same thing. These assaults on voting rights, the assaults on the infrastructure of democracy. And then you have people come along now and say, yeah, you know, Trump really, he just takes it too far. Well, with all due respect, the base of the conservative movement would not have been prepared to go that far with a Donald Trump if it hadn't been for the people who forged that conservative movement over the last 20 years and reshaped it into what it is.
All right, one more clip. Susan Collins, senior senator from Maine, on with Meet the Press and Chuck Todd. It's kind of hard to hear this clip, but what she's clearly saying to little Jack Reed in the Senate subway is that Donald Trump is crazy. She goes, he's crazy. Yeah, so it's kind of hard to hear that, but then listen to her response.
One of them had to do with a hot mic moment that caught you and Senator Reid talking about the threat that a Republican member of Congress made at you. But there was another portion of the tape that you have not referenced at all. Here it is.
Yes, I think he's crazy. I mean, I don't say that lightly and as a kind of, you know, a goofy guy.
You appear to be referencing the president there with Senator Reid. And can you expound upon that a little bit? How concerned are you about the president?
Actually, what I was talking about is the president's budget. And if you go earlier in that tape, I talk about the fact that OMB went through the budget and appeared to zero.
Okay, we'll just stop it right there. She didn't just call him crazy once. She called him crazy twice. She goes, he's crazy. He's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She wasn't talking about the budget. She didn't go, his budget's crazy.
No. Yeah, she's an honest woman when she's off mic or when she thinks she's off mic. Look, this is the interesting thing, because this is not the first time that a very prominent Republican has been caught. It's happened a few times now. Caught saying things when they didn't think they were on mic about Donald Trump. And people often ask me, you know, well, when is Trump going to go down? When is he going to be defeated? When is he going to be, you know, forced from office, if that's whatever they're looking for as regards Trump? And I always say it will happen on the day that those we treat as mainstream Republicans. Now, I know Collins is a little bit more on the liberal side of the Republican camp, although she would have been a right-winger in the Richard Nixon days. But people that we think of as mainstream Republicans, and that's Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, all these committee chairs, all these folks who come on and present pretty well on TV compared to Trump, when they start to say he is crazy and dangerous, publicly and without doubt, he's done in a week then. It's over. But until they do that, they are, and I include Susan Collins in this, they are the willing facilitators of every single thing that Trump does. Now, I know Collins voted against the health care debacle. I respect her for that. But the fact of the matter is, it's not a middle ground here. You either acknowledge the crisis or you are a facilitator.
And, of course, this crazy president is now threatening members of Congress's health care, which is a pretty remarkable thing, and we'll have to talk about that another time. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation, thanks for coming on with us.
Total pleasure.
SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day in mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances, and taxi cabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.